the latest agriculture news from across the state and the nation, here's Farm City Newsday by AgNet West. Filling in for Danielle Leal, here's today's host, Taylor Hillman.
Good morning and welcome to today's Farm City Newsday by AgNet West, coming to you today from the Central Valley Almond Day at the Fresno Fairgrounds. This is the third year of the event put on by West Coast Nut and JCS Marketing. AgNet West has a booth out here today. Brian and I will both be here covering some of the sessions, so stay tuned for that information. If you're planning on being out here, come on by our booth, say hi, and make sure you get your Farmers Equal Food bumper stickers. We've got a lot of information in today's show, some history on current pesticide regulation, how one mistake can end up affecting the entire industry, more on AB 555, the paid sick time changes that have sputtered out. They may not be gone for long. Also, a major topic as we move into summer and fire season is just around the corner. Brian German talks to the California Association of Wine Grape Growers about smoke taint and efforts to set some standards surrounding that. We've got all those topics and much more, so let's get right to the news. Paid sick time regulation changes have stalled out, but it's not going away. AB 555, the proposed legislation that aims to change paid sick leave from 3 to 5 days and allow more accumulation and carryover, has died in the House. However, there was great support for the regulation, and the costly revisions will probably be reintroduced in some way in the near future.
There is a hefty monetary value that we're talking about. Granted, there'll be some transition in terms of the translation between days and hours as we go from, again, we're now at 9.5 hours, makes up a regular workday, and in the next 2 years, that'll be ratcheted back down to 8 hours in a day. But, I mean, this is essentially almost having a doubling effect. It's not quite, but to make the math easy in your head, the increase in the amount of time plus the accumulation factor, you know, my rough math gets it a little over the double mark, almost to 2.5 times. So just to keep things simple, you know, figure that you're going to now double your liability relative to the cost of having to provide paid sick leave.
AgSafe President and CEO Amy Wolf said growers need to let their respective officials know the financial impacts these changes would create.
Absolutely. I mean, the whole reason you and I are even having this conversation is because we have both received alerts from the various trade associations with which we belong telling us, take action today, use your voice, encourage your assembly member to oppose Assembly Bill 555. I cannot encourage our agricultural community enough. Our associations do a stellar job. It's what we pay them to do. It's why we're members of those associations. But volume matters. And individual members of the assembly, individual members of the Senate, they need to hear from you, Joe Farmer, directly, as well as our various trade associations. By hearing from you, you validate, you solidify, you ensure that the message that our associations are delivering doesn't fall on deaf ears.
Now here's Brian German with the California Association of Wine Grape Growers.
With the House Appropriation Committee's approval of a bill that includes $1.5 billion in funding for issues related to smoke exposure in wine grapes, researchers hope to better understand the problem. California Association of Wine Grape Growers President John Aguirre noted that while the amount is less than what was asked for, it's still a step in the right direction for addressing many questions that remain surrounding smoke exposure.
We need to understand, you know, what compounds would one test for? What levels do these smoke compounds cause problems? How can they be reduced or eliminated through practices in the vineyard, during winemaking? Are there barriers that can be, you know, product that can be applied in the vineyard to help protect grapes during critical periods of time from smoke exposure? So many, many questions that need to be addressed. And so the funding that the House provided, we need more than the $1.5 million. And so the good news is, you know, at least we did get that amount out of the House, and that represents really a statement that it is a priority that deserves funding. But now it's the job of industry to go to the Senate and ask senators to move that number up from $1.5 million to the $5 million that we originally asked for.
I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
A single pesticide violation led to more regulation over a decade later. Monterey County Agricultural Commissioner Henry Gonzalez held the same position in Ventura County for almost 10 years. Prior to his arrival, one incident in Ventura is noted as the reason for some new current regulation.
So this was approximately 16 years ago, and this was actually before I went to Ventura County. I was not the ag commissioner then at the time, but what happened was basically a lemon grower needed to treat his orchard, and he happened to be next to a school. So he went and conducted this application, and in the course of conducting the application, he drifted the pesticide not only onto the school, but onto the parents as they were dropping off their children, onto some of the school staff, onto the children. And so there was a huge outcry, as you can imagine, which is it's right to be angry with that. That should never happen. And at the time, the laws, the regulations that were in place already prohibited that. But because of this, additional rules were put in place, including a quarter mile radius around schools in Ventura County where growers could not apply pesticides during school hours.
Gonzalez said this is a perfect example of how just one incident where an individual doesn't follow the rules can create backlash industry-wide down the road.
At the time, there was concern that that quarter mile buffer, as it were, around schools would become precedent setting, and then other counties would have to do the same, even though it was this one grower, one time that did this in one county. The fear was that regulators are going to make everybody do this in every county statewide. About 16 years passed, and yes, now that one quarter mile buffer is required around schools. Actually, this started last year in 2018. So, you know, there's a lesson in there that folks need to abide by the existing rules and regulations. And when and if they don't, well, there may be new laws and regulations that take effect because of this.
This is Farm City Newsday by Agnet West. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Agnet West's Farm City Newsday. More agriculture news for you now.
It looks like America's largest retail grocer, Walmart, is going to court after filing suit with multiple U.S. poultry companies alleging collusion to inflate poultry prices in violation of antitrust laws. A total of 30 companies are named in the lawsuit, including California's Foster Farms. The claim Walmart asserts is that the poultry companies engaged in price fixing and trade restraint from 2008 to 2016. The 98-page complaint filed in the U.S. District Court for the Western District of Arkansas alleges the companies made illegal agreements affecting the U.S. chicken industry through two specific means, claiming, quote, the first focused on coordinating their output and reducing the supply of broiler chickens into the market. The second focused on, among other things, manipulating price indices with respect to wholesale chicken prices. There have already been multiple lawsuits filed since 2016 which allege price fixing by companies involved in poultry production. June is here, and that means that it's National Dairy Month. What was originally established as National Milk Month back in 1937 as a means to promote consumption of dairy products, National Dairy Month has since evolved into an annual tradition recognizing and celebrating the dairy industry. Kicking off on June 1st with World Milk Day, National Dairy Month serves as a way to educate consumers about the health benefits of dairy products and increase dairy consumption opportunities. The celebration of dairy is especially relevant here in California, which has been the nation's leading dairy state since 1993 after surpassing Wisconsin in milk production. California is home to more than 1,300 dairy families whose farming operations house almost 2 million dairy cows. Dairy products not only provide important nutritional benefits, but dairy production brings important economic benefits to the state as well. More California facts and information about National Dairy Month is available at realcaliforniamilk.com. I'm Brian German for Agnet West Radio Network.
Well, in today's livestock news, the White House recently announced a plan to impose tariffs on all goods imported from Mexico unless more steps are taken to curb illegal migration at the U.S.-Mexico border. But last Friday, President Trump announced that Mexico had pledged to enhance its efforts to address border security issues, and the proposed tariffs were not imposed. As U.S. Meat Export Federation's Joe Sheely reports, That was a major relief to the U.S. meat industry.
There was a big sigh of relief from the U.S. red meat industry as the Trump administration shelved its plan to impose tariffs on imports from Mexico due to border security issues. U.S. pork had just gained relief in late May from a 20% retaliatory duty imposed by Mexico, and there was also concern that Mexico might retaliate against U.S. beef exports. U.S. Meat Export Federation President and CEO Dan Hallstrom discusses the issue further in this USMEF report.
Mexico, being our largest volume market for pork, absolutely an essential market. And the fact that we're able to maintain our zero duty status and avoid any further complications as it relates to tariffs is just unbelievably positive for the pork industry. And just to give you an idea, through the first 4 months of 2019, we're down 18% in volume and down 29% on value to Mexico on pork. So the fact that we're able to get back to zero duty and avoid this complication, we will see a rebound in this most important market for U.S. pork, especially when you look at items like hams. Beef's done very well. We're up almost 10% in value to Mexico. But suffice it to say that we were very concerned about the possibility of retaliation from the Mexico side if a deal had not been worked out.
Hallstrom is also hopeful that this provides a boost for the new U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement.
USMCA has to be ratified by all three countries. And up until now, I would say the U.S. has been lagging a bit, but this might provide us the momentum needed to get us moving in the right direction and hopefully getting an approval of the USMCA sooner rather than later, another important step for U.S. agriculture. I think the biggest thing that our buyers have seen is a lot of uncertainty. Uncertainty around tariffs, which we have now eliminated, and uncertainty around the passage of USMCA. So as a pork and beef industry in the U.S., I think this is the momentum that we needed.
For more information, please visit usmef.org. For the U.S. Meat Export Federation, I'm Joe Sheely.
Thanks, Joe. And last week, the U.S. House Appropriations Committee approved its FY 2020 Agriculture, Food, and Drug Administration spending bill with an amendment by Representative Rosa DeLauro of Connecticut that would prevent USDA from finalizing its new swine inspection system rule until the agency's inspector general reviews data on the proposal. The National Pork Producers Council notes they continue to support the proposed new system, which has been tested and scrutinized for years and designed to increase efficiency and effectiveness of the federal inspection process. But MPPC notes that some of the media have misreported the intent of the USDA proposal and thus continues pushing back on incorrect information. I'm Randall Wiseman for Agnet West.
This is Farm City News Day by Agnet West. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Farm City News Day by Agnet West. Coming up in a few minutes, we'll have Kathy Isom's This Land of Ours report and, of course, the California Kitchen Daily Recipe. But first, more agriculture news. New biotech crops could be available a little faster if USDA's proposed rules for testing and approving them become final. Gary Crawford has more.
Back in 2011, one former head of the USDA's National Institute of Food and Agriculture, Dr. Roger Beachy, described USDA's regulatory system for testing and approval of new biotech crops as
sometimes irrational, always costly.
He said getting a new biotech variety developed and evaluated for safety and put on the market can cost anywhere from $5 to $25 million and take from 5 to 10 years. Again, that was 8 years ago, and the system has not changed much since then. And in fact, the last time USDA made any major alterations to the way it evaluates and approves new biotech crops was back when this song was a hit. 1987. A lot has happened in the biotech world since then, but after years of work, the Agriculture Department has just come out with a new set of proposed biotech regulations called
the Secure Plant Innovation Rule.
USDA Undersecretary Greg Ibaugh told us they came up with that name, SECURE, as a sort of catchy acronym for the principles of the new proposed system: sustainable, ecological, consistent, uniform, responsible, and efficient. SECURE, in other words. It's taken a lot of time to craft this new set of biotech testing and approval regulations. One reason for that:
we not only spent time meeting with people that had concerns about biotechnology development, but innovators as to what parts of our old rule they thought were effective and efficient and what parts we needed to improve on.
Going back to 2011, former Agriculture Secretary Chuck Connor told lawmakers that the main thing he'd like to see in new regulations would be
greater certainty so that technology providers will know whether or not these products have a chance at being approved in a reasonable
amount of time.
And so Greg Ibaugh says that certainly is included in this new set of regulations. For example,
once we've made a decision on an innovation technique, we don't have to keep requiring the same research over and over again. So that will help us reduce the regulatory time frame on some of those innovations that are being replicated by different companies at the same time.
But he says there will still be a thorough check to make sure a new biotech plant does not pose any environmental or even medical threat to anybody. USDA will be taking public comments on the new system for 60 days.
And so after that, then we would take under consideration the comments that were made and make adjustments to be able to issue the final rule.
No exact timeline for that final rule yet. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Washington.
This is Farm City News Day by Agnet West. We'll have more of the day's agriculture news in just a moment. And remember, you can always get the latest agriculture news from around the state and the nation at our website, agnetwest.com. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Farm City News Day by Agnet West. I'm Taylor Hillman.
Growing white sage for smudging. That's coming up on This Land of Ours. White sage is a desert native, but thanks to a rise in popularity of the practice of smudging, more people are interested in raising the attractive herb that can be grown almost anywhere. White sage makes a beautiful landscape plant, as well as a medicinal herb. The silver and green leaves contain aromatic oils, and the flowers are popular with honeybees. White sage is known to fight colds and chest congestion because the eucalyptal content helps to clear the airways. Whether you plan to use it for smudging or you're looking for a beautiful addition to your garden, white sage is a delight to have around thanks to its sumptuous scent and unique silver leaves. You can use a number of different herbs in smudging rituals, including common sage, lavender sage, cedar, pinyon pine, juniper, or rosemary. For many people, however, white sage is the only way to go. You can grow white sage from seedlings or cuttings, but it's probably best for beginners to start from purchase plants. I'm Kathy Eisen for Agnet West.
Good day, everybody. Albert J. Hernandez, the Untamed Chef for Agnet West, and welcome to the California Kitchen, where you can learn how to cook in under 3 minutes or less. I'm your host with the most. Let's get started. So I've been getting a lot of requests for a spicy salsa, and I'm like, you know what? Let's do it. Let's make it happen. You guys want a spicy salsa? I'm going to give you a recipe for a really spicy salsa, but also goes really well with not just tacos and chips, but a little bit of everything. Sometimes a little bit of salsa goes a long way. I guess that's why sriracha was so popular, because people like to put a little bit of heat on everything. So why not make our own salsa? Here is my simple yet delicious recipe for a hot salsa. What I need first is a half a cup of fire-roasted tomatoes. Now, I want to make sure these are jalapeno fire-roasted tomatoes. Always get a good brand, because the brand does make a bit of a difference. Not all the time, but when it comes to tomatoes in a can, always make sure it's a good brand. 1 cup of tomato sauce, not tomato paste, tomato sauce. A half a cup of onion, preferably white or yellow onions, always go great. 4 tablespoons of chili flakes. 1/4 cup of lemon juice. A half bunch of cilantro. Salt and pepper always to taste after we blend everything together. The best way to blend this is always to use a food processor, not a blender. We don't want to turn this into a liquid. We want to turn it into a thick paste. It has so much flavor to this, and it's a little bit chunky too. If you want to have it chunkier, you could just pulse it. I prefer when I make chili sauce though that it's just, you know, runny, because it's still really, really great. Now, always remember this, whenever you're picking your ingredients, we always want to make sure fresh is always best, other than the tomatoes, because the tomatoes, I do it that way because I've done this a million times and I know darn well that if I go with fresh tomatoes, it's not going to have the same effect as tomatoes that have been sitting in the cans and have just been, you know, marinating and just being amazing. It's so important always to remember too, that our ingredients, we always try to go with what's in season. You know, if we want to make a mango salsa, we don't want to do that when mangoes aren't in season. And all we would do is add mango to this, and now we'd get a whole different flavor. But it's a very simple recipe. And just like me, I'm a very simple chef. I like to make really great food, and I like to make you guys all very, very happy. For this and many more, my untamed recipes, my cooking classes, all of our different events we have coming up, you could go to my website at www.ajhtheuntamedchef.com. www.farmcitynewsday.com. And if you're looking for a chef for your next event, go right to my website and give me a holler. As always, this is Albert J. Hernandez, and you can call me the Untamed Chef for AgNet West.
This is Farm City News Day by AgNet West. We'll be right back. Welcome back to AgNet West's Farm City News Day. More agriculture news for you now. This year's World Food Prize winner is noted for his vegetable seed work for farmers in developing nations. Rod Bain has the story.
A sixth-generation Dutch seed producer has lent his expertise for decades to produce vegetable seed to growers in the Philippines, in Southeast Asia, and beyond. And for that, Simon Groot was named Monday as recipient of the 2019 World Food Prize.
I'm extremely excited that the World Food Prize has recognized the importance of vegetable farming, and now especially the vegetable farming in this part of the world where I have been working for 35 years.
Groot and his company, East West Seed, have been instrumental in producing a tropical vegetable seed industry that has grown to serve 20 million smallholder farmers in 60 nations in the Southern Hemisphere. And in turn, that has led to increased production of nutritious produce and economic opportunity for growers in developing nations. Groot will formally receive the World Food Prize in ceremonies this October in Des Moines, Iowa. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Now recapping today's top story.
With the House Appropriation Committee's approval of a bill that includes $1.5 billion in funding for issues related to smoke exposure in wine grapes, researchers hope to better understand the problem. California Association of Wine Grape Growers President John Aguirre noted that while the amount is less than what was asked for, it's still a step in the right direction for addressing many questions that remain surrounding smoke exposure.
We need to understand, you know, what compounds would one test for, what levels do these smoke compounds cause problems, how can they be reduced or eliminated through practices in the vineyard, during winemaking. Are there barriers that can be, you know, product that can be applied in the vineyard to help protect grapes during critical periods of time from smoke exposure? So many, many questions that need to be addressed. And so the funding that the House provided, we need more than the $1.5 million. And so the good news is, you know, at least we did get that amount out of the House, and that represents really a statement that it is a priority that deserves funding. But now it's the job of industry to go to the Senate and ask senators to move that number up from 1.5 million to the 5 million that we originally asked for.
I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
Paid sick time regulation changes have stalled out, but it's not going away. AB 555, the proposed legislation that aims to change paid sick leave from 3 to 5 days and allow more accumulation and carryover, has died in the House. However, there was great support for the regulation, and the costly revisions will probably be reintroduced in some way in the near future.
There is a hefty monetary value that we're talking about. Granted, there'll be some transition in terms of the translation between days and hours as we go from, again, we're now at 9.5 hours, makes up a regular workday, and then the next 2 years, that'll be ratcheted back down to 8 hours in a day. But, I mean, this is essentially almost having a doubling effect. It's not quite, but to make the math easy in your head, the increase in the amount of time plus the accumulation factor, you know, my rough math gets it a little over the double mark, almost to 2.5 times. So just to keep things simple, you know, figure that you're going to now double your liability relative to the cost of having to provide paid sick leave.
AgSafe President and CEO Amy Wolf said growers need to let their respective officials know the financial impacts these changes would create.
Absolutely. I mean, the whole reason you and I are even having this conversation is because we have both received alerts from the various trade associations with which we belong telling us, take action today, use your voice, encourage your assembly member to oppose Assembly Bill 555. I cannot encourage our agricultural community enough. Our associations do a stellar job. It's what we pay them to do. It's why we're members of those associations. But volume matters. And individual members of the Assembly, individual members of the Senate. They need to hear from you, Joe Farmer, directly, as well as our various trade associations. By hearing from you, you validate, you solidify, you ensure that the message that our associations are delivering doesn't fall on deaf ears.
To get more information on the topics you heard today, visit Agnet West online at agnetwest.com. You can follow Agnet West on Twitter and Facebook with @AgnetWest. Follow Brian German with @BrianAgnetWest, Danielle Leal with @DLealAgnetWest, and Taylor Hillman with @TheManOfTheHill. This has been Farm City Newsday by Agnet West.